Hey guys, welcome back to As Told by Sarah. I am your host, Sarah. Today's episode is extremely special to me because we are going to be talking to my father. He is so inspirational to everyone in his life. I cannot wait for you guys to hear his story. He worked his way from the top being an immigrant to this country. So it's just going to be a really special episode. But first, let's talk about our affirmations. Okay, so affirmation of the month was, I am making more money than ever. I am making more money than ever. I love this affirmation. I just got so busy with real estate recently, and it's so exciting. And I don't want to say it's all about the affirmations, but they definitely put me in a good headspace to go out there and just reach my goals. So if you guys have not been doing your affirmations or haven't adopted the habit yet, please do. I promise it's worth it. It's amazing. Now, what is going on in the real estate market? We are seeing, as I've been saying these past few episodes, we are seeing major shifts. There is a ton of price changes. There's more inventory on the market. If you are a buyer, please get out there. This next episode I'm going to be doing is going to be all about the home buying process. So I will just kind of go and elaborate a little bit more about the about real estate in that episode. So please look out for it. It should be produced either this week or next week. I will let you guys know when it is available. The moment we have all been waiting for. I am going to be interviewing my dad. So here we go. Okay, everyone, I'm here with my father, Raul Ayala, and he's going to talk to us about his journey, how he came to Riverside, and everything in between. So, Dad?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you, Mija?
Good. I'm doing really good.
Good.
So tell us about your journey, Dad. So how did you find yourself in Riverside? What's the family history?
Well, we got to go way back, Mija. So I was originally born in 68, so I just turned 50 this year. And so I was born in Michoacán, Mexico, back in 68. And my parents immigrated to the U.S. about 75. And so we were left as a kid. I remember I was left there with my grandmother in Guanajuato until about the age of 8. And then we came to the U.S. and I started my elementary years in Placentia, California. Mm-hmm. I was there for, just going to school, learning the language, learning English, and did. Yeah. My senior year of high school was, I graduated in 87. So in 86, my parents decided to move from Placentia, California to Riverside, California. So we moved out here my senior year of high school. I ended up going to Norte Vista High School and graduating from there. As you know, that's where I met your mother. That's where I met your mother. And eventually, we ended up getting married. And so, in 86, we were here and finished mm-hmm. my high school years. Started working as a custodian in Jarupa Unified. And then worked myself through school and started teaching in 96 in Riverside Unified.
I was 3 years old.
You were 3 years old at the time. And that's the time we bought our first home, as you know, mm-hmm. in the Wood Streets, and have been there ever since. And so, I started as a classroom teacher, went on to become an assistant principal and ultimately a principal
wow.
at elementary. And now I've been here at Shimawa Middle School at the middle school level for the last 5 years, going on my 6th year. So,
wow.
So kind of thumbnail sketch of where I started, Guanajuato, Mexico to Placentia to Riverside and
that's incredible, Dad. Talk about a move up story, though. You went from working as a custodian at a school district all the way to principal. So what do you think motivated you to want to go into this profession of education? You told an incredible story one time about one of your first teachers who really inspired you. Do you think that's what inspired you to go this route?
Well, I think yes. I mean, I think all of us have a pivotal teacher in our career. We should, anyways. Mm-hmm. If we've done a good job in the public education system, is connecting with kids, and then having a teacher that kind of changes your trajectory, opens your eyes and to possibilities, and holds those high expectations for you, and then you pursue your career. So, for me, you know, your grandmother, you know, rest in peace. She always would tell me the stories of when I was a kid. As you know, my older brother, your uncle Efren, is older than me, and he started school before me in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And she tells a story of me always crying and wanting to go to school and following him, and she had to hold me back and go get me from the street and bring me back home because I wanted to go to school.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, education has always been something that I valued. Education has always been, at least for me, has been a great equalizer and given me the opportunities. And I wouldn't be able to sit where and do what I do without my education. So I've always valued that tremendously, and have always done good in school. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. It's been a lot of hard work, you know, but I knew that if my status in society would one day depend on my education, my merit, my ability, my effort. And mm-hmm. so I took that seriously, and that's what I did. You went for it, Dad.
So you found yourself in Riverside, California. How old were you when you first moved here?
I just turned 18. So wow. It was my senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So you were going into your senior year in brand new school then.
Yes.
So what was your first impression of the people here, of the overall community?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, coming from Orange County, I mean, the pace alone was a little bit different than I liked. It was a little bit slower here. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, your regular day-to-day hustle and bustle.
Yeah.
And it was hard. The aspect that was hard for it at that age, you know, because everything revolves around your friends and whatnot. And yeah. So just leaving the neighborhood where we grew up there for a short period of time, and then leaving those friends behind, and then coming here. But those are all new possibilities.
Yeah.
So just like every time I've changed jobs or changed school sites, you know, one of the things that is exciting for me is all the new people that I'm going to meet, all the new experiences mm-hmm. that I'm going to have. And so, it was definitely different. You still had your same kind of groups of friends in high school. Your headbangers, you had your jocks, you had, you know, your goth and all that. And so, it gave me a great opportunity to kind of just in some way start anew and then meet different people here.
And meet mom.
And mom. yes.
My mother.
So it was quite exciting, actually, and thankful. I know things happen for a reason. So I'm blessed that things worked out the way they did, because, you know, a lot of good has come from that.
Oh,
you
know, yeah. So you, Abuelito and Abuelita, purchased a home in Riverside. Is that why you guys moved here initially?
Yes, that was the thing. You know, home ownership, I think, was very important for my father. And one of the reasons really was that because the if we stopped and kind of just thought about the place we were growing up mm-hmm. in, you know, we come from the barrio, aka ghetto, the other side of the tracks. And so in that, my dad did see a lot of young men, you know, heading down the path of whether, you know, joining gangs, whether, you know, it be drug abuse, just, you know, he didn't want that for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that he told us, you know, we're moving because of these reasons, and he wanted his own home. And so that must have been a point of pride for him and my mother to work so hard and to work, you know, graveyard shifts and double shifts and to save enough money to be able to buy a home and put us in a location where they felt we could prosper and be safe. And I think what also helped, we moved into Riverside, and right next door, as you know, was our aunt's mm-hmm. home. And so, you know, and being just Hispanic and Mexican, you know, the family is everything. And so we tend to gravitate and kind of stick together. And sometimes we end up moving right next door to each other, too.
Very common. Okay, so incredible journey, Dad. So what is your why? What do you think your force is? You have just this extreme motivation, I think, just alone. But you have to have an underlying why you do what you do. What would you say that is for you?
My why as far as education and what I do, mm-hmm. I think is a little different from what from the vision that we started here at Shimawa and established with my team. And that is, I'm a big believer that, you know, well, let me back up a little bit. I would say this about about our educational system. You know, I'm glad that we live in a country where we have a public education system where somebody, you know, that is just may just be ordinary can, you know, with hard work, with, you know, an emphasis on their school and good teachers and good schooling, can do something extraordinary. And so for me, I think education has transformed my life. Again, I wouldn't be and do what I do if it wasn't for my education. So I value that tremendously. I've always had great respect for educational institutions, colleges, you know, any form of schooling. And so for me, that's my why, you know, is I want to give back and help others through education, because I think that's, I mean, again, we have a system where kids can do that, come from nothing to be able to succeed and pursue, you know, something that is enjoying for them, that benefits others, that would set them on a path of being a productive and a good citizen. And so
you did, you
know,
it, Dad.
Our educational system can do that. And so that's why I'm here, is, you know, how do I leverage the resources that I have, my teachers, to be able to transform somebody's life through education. So that's my why.
So rewarding. Absolutely. So rewarding.
Absolutely it is.
So what do you think, what is your next step? Do you think you're happy here? Or what is your dream right now?
Well, as you know, I've moved quite a bit as far as, you know, not only within schools levels, you know, being a principal, coming from elementary, going to middle school. My next career move is going to be into high school. I'll be looking at a high school principalship, and then eventually a central office job at the district office. But I don't want to be, I'm not ready to be removed from a school site yet, or be so removed from students, because that's where the joy is, you know. And so when my day gets tough, and, you know, or I might be stressed out in some ways, I center myself by going back and going out into, you know, classrooms and talking to kids, and they remind me of why it is that I do what I do. And so it's very rewarding.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's amazing, Dad. So if you were talking to yourself 15 years ago, what would you say?
15 years ago, boy. So 15 years ago, I'm 50. So that'd be put me at 35, you know. At 35, I think it would be no different that if I would give myself this advice at being 50 now, if I was, you know, 35, if I was 20, if I was 15, or even beyond that, you know, we lost my mother. And one of the things that I'm currently doing on my school site is the parent engagement program, and where I tell my story and I become vulnerable and I tell them and I try to connect with my parent community, not as the principal, but as who I am. And so I've been sharing with them some of the leadership lessons that I learned with my from home, because that's where leadership begins. And so the advice that I would give myself, I think, again, it would be no different. It's just to be humble, to be humble, to have humility, to think less of myself and more about others. And that's not just true in my professional life. I also want that to be true in my personal life. So that when I do things and I provide for my family, that I'm, you know, that I'm not focused on what I want, or me, is that I need to think about others before that. And that, and as I reflect, that's probably one of the greatest lessons that I learned from my mother, because she was always the kind of person who thought about others before she thought about herself.
Oh, she was incredible.
And so, you know, I think I've shared this with you, but I remember as a kid, when we were in Placentia, you know, my parents would always have, we would always have somebody living with us, whether it be another couple, you know, a cousin, an uncle, or somebody just in the neighborhood that my dad befriended that needed help. And they would come and live with us. And I remember as a kid, well, that didn't sit too well with me, you know, because, you know, we lived in
small
houses, it was, and then you had other people there. And my mother would always tell me, and I'll say it in Spanish, then I'll loosely translate it into English, you know, but she would often tell me as a kid is, you know, a hoy por ellos, mañana por nosotros. And so what that means, that would, if I were to interpret that loosely, and me basically, you know, says that you should think about today it's, you know, they're in need, so we should help them. Tomorrow, you never know, it might be us in that same situation, and we won't need some help and assistance from others. And, and so you want to give. And so, right. And so that, you know, is a to me, a clear example of her humility and how she thought about others and how she wanted to help others, regardless of what we mm-hmm. had or what we didn't have. She always shared.
Yeah,
she always did that. And so it gets, I think, deeper, Miha, into what I think is the universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that universal truth for me would be that the more you give, the more you get.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
oh yeah.
So I think that's very true. So, you know, and part of the profession, my work that I do, you know, I give and give and give. And I know that I'm blessed to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, getting at that ultimate truth is that, you know, it comes back to you.
Yep.
And you being in real estate, you know that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, that you give to your clients, you give to your clients, and mm-hmm. then they give back.
Yep.
And so that's the universal truth for me is
definitely
again, the more you give, the more you get.
That's amazing. And truly, Dad, I'm just amazed. This is incredible. But there's no better father in the whole entire world. Sorry, I'm getting a little choked up. There's no better father. And the way he's talking right now is how he talks. He's so patient. I think every lesson I've ever learned through my life, you've always approached it with such just grace and ease. And I don't think he's ever raised his voice at me. He's truly just an incredible human. So thank you so much, Dad, so much. And for sharing your story. So I do want to touch on something because you're saying give and give and give. And I think that's a form of meditation also, centering yourself. And you believe in meditation and the powers of it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, and before a couple of things come to mind. I think that if ultimately you're going to get to that universal truth and, you know, and understand that the more you give, the more you get, you first have to be you have to know yourself very, very mm-hmm. well. You have to be comfortable being alone. You have to be comfortable with your own thoughts. You have to have the ability to lead yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is very hard,
mm-hmm.
You know, before you can begin to, you know, to lead others or to give back to others. And so one of the things that I try to do, and I'm not very good at it. I mean, talking about, you know, meditating, just kind of being centered all the time, is that there are times when I just lay in my bed, you know,
yeah.
before I get up and you know, I do some deep breathing, you know, and mm-hmm. I try to just let things go and just, mm-hmm. you know, in this feeling of relaxation, this feeling of being at ease, being at mind and just, you know, clearing my mind
yeah.
and opening my mind to, you know, to be at ease, to be at peace with myself.
Yes.
And so I think that if we can't do that and be, you know, be at ease with ourselves and know ourselves well, then it's very hard for us to keep that from others. Others will know when we're not okay.
Yeah.
Your mother's a great example of that. I don't have to say the things. We've been together so long. Is, you know,
she knows.
A look, a tone, or whatnot. She goes, okay, well, something's up. You know, so I can't keep that from
yeah.
others. And so, again, I need to be okay with myself first.
Definitely. So and I think I think meditation comes in a bunch of forms. Like you have a garden mm-hmm. and do you feel like when you're out there kind of tending to your garden, do you think that might be a form of meditation for you as well?
It's not only meditation. I think for me, it's beyond that. It's therapeutic.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the work that I do involves a lot of my brain, a lot of my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the physical aspect of work, you know, you need that in my opinion. And so for me, yeah, you know, tending to my garden, even mowing my lawn.
Yeah.
It is therapeutic for me or,
mm-hmm.
you know, trimming trees or doing something that doesn't involve, you know, my just thinking, but the physical aspect of work too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, definitely. My dad's a doer, guys. He's never sitting down. He's always doing something. And I appreciate that about you, Dad. So we're going to go into some fun questions here. My dad is a huge music lover. I have a large musical palette and it's all thanks to you, Dad. I can listen to absolutely anything. He listens to absolutely everything from an early age. There's always music playing, always, constantly. So, Dad, what would your dream concert lineup be? Like Coachella lineup, what is your dream lineup?
Oh, for this upcoming Coachella?
Yeah, just think anybody, dead or alive, what is your dream?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. That's a big question because of the just my musical appreciation and genres of music
mm-hmm.
and artists, past, present, and well, so that's a difficult question for me, but let me give it to you this way. So what my dream Coachella lineup would be for groups that are touring right now.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
There we go.
So I'm going to keep it immediate, you know, in hopes that maybe I'm going to put it out there. Hopefully,
put it out to the universe.
So for Coachella this upcoming year, it would be like, say, like on a Friday, right? Gorillaz have a new album. Mm-hmm. They're touring.
So that's a possibility.
That's a great headliner for like a Friday night. On a Saturday night, Pearl Jam is also touring.
Really?
Yeah. So wouldn't it be great to have Pearl Jam?
Yes.
And then on the third night, Sunday, closing the show, how about the Fleetwood Mac?
Oh, what a dream. I just got the chills.
So Gorillaz,
Pearl Jam,
Fleetwood Mac. Would be my dream lineup for Coachella up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
My ultimate lineup, would be, you know, I did get to see Prince in concert, and that was unbelievable. Michael Jackson would have to be up there for me. I never did get to see him live. Saw plenty of footage, plenty of videos and all that, but I think him would be one. I'm a big 80s fan, as you know. I grew up in that era. A reunion of the Smiths would be an ultimate.
Morrissey's playing.
It'd be a great lineup. So, you know, throw a Michael Jackson in there, throw the Smiths.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was fortunate to see Tom Petty before he passed, and that was an amazing concert. In fact, we saw him together. And just talk about, you know, some professional polished musicians.
Incredible. Yeah.
But the other artist that I would want to see, who passed away, who I consider to be the thinking man's rock star, that would be David Bowie for me.
Yeah.
So David Bowie, a Smiths reunion, and a Michael Jackson would be awesome.
Where did this music appreciation come from? Do you remember listening to music as a young kid or?
Yes, I think for me growing up, a lot of I had a varied musical taste, and it really, I think, stems from me. You know, I think it was therapy for me, really, because regardless of how tough things were going, you know, as a kid and adolescent growing up, my go-to was always music, you know, and I would just sit and listen to, well, back in the day, you know, you put on a Walkman and a tape and you just listen to it, and it would be an escape for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as you kind of think and plan and strategize about, you know, how you're going to respond to the multiple issues or, you know, things that come up in life. And so, but yeah. And then growing up, you know, I would always buy music. You know, our first album that we purchased, I don't know if you know this, but I remember the day clearly. It was me and your Uncle Efren, and we were sitting over at Kramer Park, and there was a Stop and Go across the way. And we pulled our money together, and we walked across the street, and we bought our first album, which was Kiss. Kiss's Love Gun album.
Oh my god!
So I still have that album actually, with all the scratches and everything.
Goodness.
And so we listened to that thing, and we started. Again, music was always part of it, not just English, but also Spanish music. You know, so yeah. So I just I can appreciate just about anything in any piece of music.
Oh, yeah.
I can appreciate something, I should say, in any piece of music.
Yep, definitely. Okay, and you read a ton, and you're probably my source to go to if I want a good article or something. What is something you like to read that you think people should read, whether it be a magazine source, a book?
Well, there's lots of books, and I guess it just depends on what your interest is. You know, I have to read. I do a lot of reading professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm currently reading The Anatomy of Peace, So I devote some time to that because of, again, my profession. But if I were to just pick up something and to read, I read a lot of Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I really like in Rolling Stone is a lot of the articles that are related to national affairs. You know, they do a great coverage on different topics that are things that are happening throughout the world. So I'd love to pick up a magazine like that and be able to read and keep abreast. On my phone, I do a lot of Flipboard, that I'm subscribed to a lot of educational articles, travel. But I do spend a lot of time reading about education because that's what I do.
Yeah.
And so.
Great. Constantly learning.
Constantly learning. There's always something to learn. So I just met with my coach last week, and One of the things that he suggested to me is just reading some, again, some more books on leadership, because as I progress and as I want to move my career forward, I'm not in a doctorate program right now. And so it's important that I kind of stay abreast and do some reading as it relates to leadership. So one of the books that's been suggested to me was Leadership is an Art by Mark Dupree. And that'll be my next read. And so, again, a lot of reading for work, but my downtime, it's Flipboard, and it's you know, some a Rolling good novel Stones. Or a good Rolling Stone article, so stuff like that.
Great. Well, Dad, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day and schedule to meet with me. I am so appreciative of it, and your story is absolutely incredible. I can't wait for everybody to hear this. Thank you, Dad.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any final words for the podcast?
No. Just be good people. Be good human beings. Mm-hmm. Help others.
Yep. Thank you, Dad.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Dad, for being here for me, supporting my goals and dreams. You are the best father ever. I hope you guys learned something. He teaches me something almost every day. Thank you so much for listening. Be back next week. I hope to see you and hear from you. Thanks. Bye.